As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. I'm Ian Irving and we are literally straddling the globe on this show to celebrate Manchester United once again being the greatest team on planet Earth because they've won a pre-season friendly 4-0 against Liverpool. As Andy Mitten has already said, we just report the facts. I don't think anyone is getting carried away though, are they, to be fair? And Erik ten Hag was very candid and grounded with his comments post-match. But we'll talk about the game, we'll talk about the magical mystery tours that Andy Mitten has been on to get over to Bangkok. Laurie's been out and about as well in Thailand, and Carl and I have just been watching football so we can reflect on the pre-season friendly that was Manchester United 4, Liverpool 0. So it's a good morning to Carl Anker in Manchester. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, mate.
It's a good afternoon, I think, to Laurie Whitwell and Andy Mitten in Bangkok. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Afternoon. It's just gone 2 p.m. and me and Andy have both been eating the same thing as our final, well, my final meal in Bangkok because I've got a flight straight after this. I had a Thai green curry. What was yours, Andy?
I had a Thai green curry about 10 minutes
ago. There we go.
So cliched, both of you. Shouldn't you be eating Thai red curries following Manchester United?
Good point. Good point.
Minus one MUFC point for that. 4-0 though, Laurie. I don't know what we expected. I don't know what we should draw from it necessarily, considering how many changes Liverpool had to make and the fact that they are further behind Manchester United in their pre-season preparations. But pretty good that, wasn't it?
So you're not counting that as the first trophy for Manchester United in 5 years?
Well, I've seen the trophy. It's like a stadium and a car and all sorts all rolled into one. It looked like a very impressive thing. Yeah.
There was lots of ticker tape on that plinth in the stadium last night. It was pretty spectacular.
Stockholm Reloaded, was it? I've still got fond memories of jumping up and down with my dad in the Friends Arena, yeah.
I mean, listen, it's quite, you know, fun, isn't it, to joke about? But at the same time, 4-0 win over Liverpool, you know, you can enjoy that. You're allowed to enjoy that. Same time, no one's getting carried away. There was obviously mistakes, as Erik ten Hag mentioned afterwards. But more than that, there was kind of encouragement, wasn't there, from the fact that you saw Marcus Rashford on the left, Jadon Sancho on the right, doing what you thought they could do when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer signed Jadon Sancho, and that was the kind of original plan, you know, intensity with their pressing, also getting chances, creating chances. I think Jadon Sancho really did stand out though. I mean, he seems to like really enjoy himself. At one point he controlled Luke Shaw's crossfield pass with his back heel, which was a ridiculous piece of skill, which I absolutely loved up in the stands. And then the fact that Bruno Fernandes was actually playing these Hollywood passes and they were coming off, the fact that Anthony Martial was actually doing some pressing. You know, me and Andy have always spoken about the fact that he, you know, shone at the Etihad in March 2021 and we've kind of been clamouring for that again. It's a pre-season friendly. He came off holding his hip grimacing, but that was still quite nice to see. I thought, you know, more than anything, it was just a nice confidence boost for people. Also, a couple of mentions to the two young lads, Charlie Savage and Zidane Iqbal, in midfield against Naby Keita, Fabinho, and
Thiago,
there we go. The first choice Liverpool midfield, and they more than held their own, did really well, so that encouragement for them. But I think the main thing that you can draw from this kind of match and this pre-season tour is, can Erik ten Hag get his message across through to the players? It seems like he is doing so. And can they build a bit of confidence, you know, in the team? And again, that first match is a good indicator. we were really fortunate to get open training session, and we'll probably get onto that a little bit more, but the fact that you could see in person Erik ten Hag getting in the mix on the coaching, the drills, and telling people when it was wrong and what he wanted, that was really good to see. So I think a lot of the players have kind of responded well to that.
I think in addition to what Laurie said, and I'm nodding here in agreement when he's talking, we could mention Eric Bailly. I thought he had a good game. I think we should mention the fans as well. Over 50,000 people. Wasn't a sellout, but it's still a huge crowd. Probably wasn't a sellout because ticket prices were extremely high for the average Thai person. So that meant that the type of people in the stadium were upper middle classes. But it was an enjoyable evening. And the scoreline means that we can smile today. Manchester United 4, Liverpool 0. I don't know how Liverpool didn't score. It was against three different Liverpool teams, but Liverpool are not my focus. Probably say, to be fair, Liverpool, there were slightly more Liverpool fans in the stadium than Manchester United fans. And that was also true in Michigan in 2018. And that's probably because Liverpool have got the edge over Manchester United at the moment. Erik ten Hag said there were mistakes. Well, there's mistakes in every football match, because if there weren't, then they'd end 0-0. But his demeanour was pretty expressionless, and he's certainly not getting carried away with it. He's all about the football at the moment. Like Carl and Laurie, I'm hearing good things about him on the training ground. His absolute focus is on the football. This tour is happening for football, but also for commercial reasons. And I'm getting good vibes off him. I had absolutely brilliant vibes off Louis van Gaal when he first came. So we'll probably say 15 times in this podcast that we're not getting carried away.
We aren't getting carried away, are we, Andy?
But we're all smiling. And why can't we smile, you know? Because I was in the away end at Anfield in April, and it was absolutely horrific. And that was a league game. It was more important. But far better us speaking here after a 4-0 win than a 4-0 defeat. Someone inside the club said to me 4 days ago, we could get tanked by Liverpool in Bangkok. And that didn't happen. Some really good goals. I thought the goal where Eric Bailly broke and played in Pelestre, he was very quick running with the ball, and Ahmad was fantastic.
I was just laughing at that in the stands. I don't know what you thought, Andy, but the sight of Eric Bailly just deciding all of a sudden, I'm going to go for it. I just started laughing.
I wanted him to get on the end of it. I couldn't believe that.
He was in the box, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Never mind. It was a great goal, like you say. Carl, you had a different view like I did to the lads over in Thailand, but we're probably maybe better placed to look at the system at home, in a sense, because you've got that detachment from the atmosphere and everything else. Our view is a little bit more cold. So what did you make of your first sight of Erik ten Hag's Manchester United?
I really enjoyed it. And I know we're all going to say we don't want to get carried away, but
we're not getting carried away, Carl.
We're not getting carried away.
That's 5 or 6 now.
But we're not getting carried away, are we, mate?
I'm going to say just a little bit for the listeners that maybe want to get carried away a little bit. And
yeah, okay.
I enjoyed watching Manchester United.
Great
and
point.
I haven't enjoyed watching Manchester United since March? April?
Even March?
Maybe this year?
What?
That was sort of, I mean,
what happened
way,
in March?
Way before that, surely.
What, the Brentford game? I went, okay, that's all right.
I think that was January.
That'll do. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's been that long, Carl.
It's that long. So I watched the game in Tibb Street Tavern in the Northern Quarter in Manchester.
Great venue for sports.
Really nice. They got MUTV, had the cricket on and whatnot. Had a couple of United fans behind me saying various things about Fred, and then burst out laughing when Fred scored the goal.
Great goal as well, wasn't it?
It was fantastic.
I'm getting carried away, yeah?
Yeah. I think one thing that really stuck out, well, one, Jadon Sancho on the right-hand side, fantastic. Absolutely the sort of thing I've wanted to have in Manchester United for ages. And he once again showed that, yeah, he's not the fastest winger, but in terms of decision making and very quickly processing loads of information, he's one of the best young players in the world. He very often does the right thing at the right time over and over and over again. Something that also impressed me with Pelestri and Ahmad during that goal was they were really, really thinking about, okay, when do I play the correct pass? Do I do it now? Do I do it now? When do I release the ball? That was quite nice. They were playing sort of inverted fullbacks. So Dalot and Shaw would come into the half space or central areas to help progress the ball, which is very Ajax style. Scott McTominay was playing as the deepest midfielder. He, again, started brightly in the first 10 minutes, but then some of the old tendencies that Scott McTominay has creeped in a little bit, but he, you know, treaded water pretty well there, I thought.
He put one in on Milner as well, didn't he? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
when you were saying Scott McTominay, I was like, yeah, you're spot on there, but I just thought he like put one in on Milner, then Milner put one back on him. And I was like, this is a pre-season friendly, but it still has that edge a little bit, which I think Scott McTominay always brings. So.
Yep. And Martial's pressing was really good. And you know, I think I've said I'm a retired Martial FC fan on this podcast.
Coming out of retirement.
It was a half an hour where I went, hang on, maybe I should get my membership card out. Get out the shredder. It was a nice performance. I will say in the first 20 minutes, Liverpool probably were the better team. And there were two or three attacks Liverpool had, especially you know on the counter-attack where I went, if this was a full-strength Liverpool side, they probably would have scored. Luis Diaz in particular had Dalot. I'm not going to say on toast, but...
on warmed bread.
Yeah, there you go. But I enjoyed it, and it was one of those things where I'm going, I this is nice. This is the first time in a long time where I can just enjoy watching Manchester United play.
Do you know what I thought was odd as well post-match, Laurie? Jurgen Klopp said that Manchester United's aggressive man-marking style in midfield caused them problems. I'm struggling to remember a reference point similar to that from a manager post-match talking about a Manchester United team. Not necessarily that particular aspect, but something like that, picking out a certain aspect in the tactical plan that's caused the team problems. I was encouraged by that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's something that I hadn't spotted. So, you know, obviously these guys that I paid a lot of money, you know, to manage these teams obviously do instantly see those kind of things. And I suppose, you know, just reflecting back on that Scott McTominay thing, you know, he was hard in on, you know, his opposition player, I suppose, whenever they had the ball, Fred as well. I think what I did quite like, yeah, there was moments where Liverpool cut through United and you perhaps would look back on it and go, okay, well, that's, you know, poor positional play in some regard. But the fact that actually overall the balance between risk and reward in their positional play paid off. So, you know, that is why Fred was up there in a position to chip Alisson from, you know, 20 yards when, I mean, it was glorious watching it in action. And then you sort of see it back on replay and you're like, how's he even seen that through the crowd of people? But I think that was a really interesting tactical idea. Clearly Ten Hag has put that into them. And I just go back to this training session. It'd be fantastic if United, I know they're not going to do it on a regular basis because they don't want to give their secrets away. But at the same time, it really does help, you know, media, fans understand what they're trying to do when you can see a live, you know, training session and be that up close with it. Because I think Ten Hag, the little drills that he was doing, you could see the triangles. He stopped one of the drills, you know, the 8-on-3, to say, actually, you know, you need two people in the middle. You need to create triangles. That's the principle. In a kind of aggressive manner, he pulled up Jadon Sancho, he pulled up Aaron Wan-Bissaka to drive inside, as Carl mentioned, the inverted fullbacks. And, you know, they obviously... Jadon Sancho's performance after that, he wasn't cowed by Ten Hag calling him out in front of, you know, 10,000 people in the stands. Everyone heard it. He was actually, it seemed to me, inspired. So, you know, hopefully that bodes well for the future.
I think one thing that's also really struck me was, so this is, you know, Manchester United's first tour since 2019, more or less. And this was the first sort of open training session we've seen with Manchester United since about then. And, you know, Ten Hag is a tracksuit manager. He will want to lead training on a daily basis, week to week, and want to do that. And we know, you know, Ralph Rangnick delegated a lot of training to Chris Armas and had that weird system of information being fed in via AirPods. We know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer mostly left training to Kieran McKenna and Michael Carrick. Jose Mourinho mostly left training to Rui Ferreira. This is quite nice to watch. It's two, this is the first time we've seen a training session in a long time. And three, it's the first time we've seen a Manchester United manager take training in such a long time that I could, yeah, if you're not a Manchester United fan, I can imagine you might look at what's currently going on. Why are you so impressed with what appears to be basic, in air quotes, modern football? But I think if you're a Manchester United fan, this is all new. This is all quite exciting. And yeah, don't get carried away, but also nod your head a bit. Have a smile on your face. This is refreshing.
Yeah, you want it to continue, don't you? You had a taste of it and you want it to carry on like this.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Andy, one interesting aspect from training, and Laurie's written extensively about it on The Athletic if people want to go and read more about the open session and all the different moments in there, was also the personnel who were in his backroom team, and Darren Fletcher being one of those. Is he going to be a part of it now, do we think?
I think Darren will. I think there'll be more additions to his backroom team. I think there's been some clarity about Mick Phelan. He is not going to be assistant manager anymore. That was something which hung in a flux for a couple of weeks. I think the club would like to retain him in some way. Maybe that might be an ambassadorial role, but he's very highly regarded by a lot of the people at Manchester United, and rightly so, in my opinion. Ten Hag's training, someone said to me, is actually quite similar to Kieran McKenna and Solskjaer's sessions. And that was said as a compliment. And it was also said to me that it's going to take time. You know, we're not getting carried away with the Liverpool 4-0.
No.
But these things take time. Don't expect any miracle solutions overnight. And noted the formation, the 4-2-3-1. That was the one fancied by Solskjaer in the main. Good to see a manager on the grass. That's where he's strongest. That's where he'll earn the respect from his players. And Ferguson didn't really go on the grass a lot. He often left it to his lieutenants. I remember Carlos Queiroz telling me a story. He turned up first day for training, expecting, well, he didn't know what to expect. Ferguson just said, "They are, you take training today and every day." And he said it was like being handed the keys to a Ferrari, but he hadn't planned any training sessions. David Moyes tried to do everything. That was probably a fault of his. He tried to take training and do everything else. And at a club like United, you can't do everything. Van Gaal had a good team around him. Jose had his team taking the training sessions. So I've got no problem at all with what I'm hearing and seeing from Ten Hag on the training ground at the moment. Yes, he'll be judged by results. Yes, I still think he's got a massive job to do. Fans still want more signings. What would success be for United this year? It's really hard to say. But as Carl said, it's just nice to smile after watching a game, because it was that bad last year. And some of my friends, they're like, we're not going. People who travel on all these tours, we're not going. The club's in an absolute mess. They've really got the hump with United at the moment. They really have. It's slightly different for us because we're journalists. We get paid to do this. And we can be United fans. We can love the club. We can want the team to win. But some of the feedback I get from people who've gone home and away for years, they're absolutely livid with the club. They just are. Now, none of them have got back to me today because they were moaning before the game yesterday. And I know what some of their personalities will be like. And maybe after like 3 days, they'll say, yeah, I heard Bangkok wasn't too bad then. And that's what we're up against. But I think there's a lot of players there. We've mentioned lots of them. Sancho didn't have a great first season. Martial's stock is probably at its lowest ever level. I'd love these people to come good. But almost if you're saying Martial's going to be United's main centre-forward this year, you're going to be ridiculed for it. That's a decision of the manager. I don't know what he's decided. The Ronaldo stuff is still in the air. We're probably not going to focus too much on that, and I'm glad of that because that's had too much coverage. This is a good opportunity for the manager to see his players. Laurie was right mentioning Charlie Savage and Zidane Iqbal. They'll get chances to shine against really good opponents as well. Liverpool are not a bad football team. And I know they played lots of different teams. Well, good. He had to play against three different Liverpool teams. More difficult than playing one. Even Tom Heaton, when he came on, did well. So, yeah, confidence was a major issue for Manchester United last year. And I saw, after the game, the players going back onto the team coach, and their demeanour was the opposite when I last saw them outside Selhurst Park on May the 22nd. That's not going to make United champions this year, but it's a nice little pill to perk everybody up.
Yeah, just picking up on one of the things Andy said there in terms of the coaching staff and the open training session and seeing how it all fitted together. I mean, Darren Fletcher came over beforehand and had a chat with a few of our journalists. It was nice to see him. I think his role is kind of going to you know, continue to be a little bit what it was last season, bridge between the 21s and the first team. So obviously you had, you know, the likes of Iqbal and Savage over there, plus Garnacho, Hannibal, you know, so that's his kind of domain, I suppose, sort of seeing which players can step into the first team picture. But Steve McClaren, I was kind of impressed with, you know, it's been a long time since he's kind of, we've seen him on the grass, but you could see that he's obviously a very talented coach, had a nice air about him, was cracking jokes, was definitely instilling, making sure the players were doing the press ups when they you know, lost various different challenges, and had a bit of a glint in his eye at doing so. Quite often spoke to Ten Hag as well, which I thought, okay, so they were only together for a year at 20. I wasn't sure how strong that bond would be, but you could sense certainly that they had a good relationship. And then Mitchell van der Garg, I still think he's like a Bond villain. You know, he's kind of got that air of menace about him. So he was overseeing the other group.
It's the glasses, isn't it?
It was good. Yeah, he wasn't actually wearing glasses, I don't think, for the training.
Was he not?
I don't think he was. I could be wrong. But it was, you could see how it all functioned together, and that was you know, good. And just one thing on the fact that Ten Hag is probably more involved than Solskjaer was, than Ranić was, is that going to mean that the players, you know, are more willing to listen to him then when he's on the touchline and having a go at them, you know? And I don't know, listen, there's different ways of doing it, but, you know, Ferguson used to come in, didn't he, at those moments, and that would really give players a jolt, you know, and kind of think, oh, right, you know, now it's serious that Ferg is involved. But I wonder if the modern era, they kind of want somebody that's sort of always like that and kind of, you know, so it kind of feels perhaps a bit more authentic and lasting. I don't know. But they were just some of the things that I thought were really interesting that I picked up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure people will be interested to read your takeaway on The Athletic from that training session. Also, Liam Tharm as well has broken down everything with an article on there, which is a very interesting read too. But of course, it wasn't just about watching Manchester United train and play in Bangkok, was it, Laurie? You've been out and about, and here's a flavour of your chats with local fans and sampling the best that the Thai capital has to offer.
Hi, I'm Nick from The Standard, basically a news online news organization here in Thailand.
Yeah, I'm Nat from Dubai with Nat, the channel from Thailand.
Great, so you guys are in the press section, obviously, for the game tomorrow. But can you just talk a little bit about what this occasion means to people in Thailand?
Because it's the first time in the history of our country. There's never been a United versus Liverpool before. So here is a big occasion for our country.
And you've seen that with the interest. I mean, 10,000 here today, even though tickets are very expensive, right?
You know, since the COVID-19 situation, people has been in lockdown. All we can do is like stay at home and watch the highlight replay and replay and replay. And right now we actually see the new era of Manchester United come here to Bangkok and actually see Ten Hag like managing style in person. So I think it's generated a lot of excitement in Thailand, especially in Bangkok here. People are coming and, you know, some people have been talking about the price of the ticket to come in, but after I talked to a few people that actually paid for the ticket and to be here in person and seeing it, they say it's worth every penny to see this experience for yourself.
What's your name, first
Rooney,
of all?
Rooney.
Oh, Rooney.
Yeah,
like Rooney. The player?
Yeah, Rooney.
Not spelled the same?
No, not different spelling.
Okay, lovely.
Yeah. No, I paid 20,000 Thai baht to get here. Yeah, for the very first day.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of United. Yeah. So okay, personally, it's fine. But in general, I mean, in Thailand, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, that's 1 month salary wage for someone. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If it's lower than this, like the stadium would fill with people.
Right, okay.
There's a lot of people out there who doesn't have money to come here and who is a big fan of both team, I would say.
Hello, so I'm here with
Natty.
And Natty, you're here at the Athene Hotel where Manchester United are staying. Can you just sort of tell me why you're here today?
I'm here because I want to support them.
And how long have you been following Manchester United, and how much does it mean to have them in Thailand, in your home country?
Yes, I follow them around 20 years.
And you've got all the merchandise. You've not got the new shirt yet, though.
Yes, I have a new shirt.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Is that for the game? You're saving that for the game?
Yes.
This is my first time watching them live playing.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's amazing. So it's just like a deep dream come true, I would say.
Yeah, so it means a lot. People are sort of wondering why do they go on these tours, but we can see here today they've got a lot of fans here that obviously have passion for them.
Exactly. It, like I think Thai fan would love to see like both teams. There's a big team.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it looks great. And is it everything you hoped it would be? Any particular favourites? Anything that you've seen so far in training that caught your eye?
Right now, it's just like, it's good. It's going great. I saw the new manager, Ten Hag. I think he'll do amazing here. And we're going to win this, I think.
What, this match?
Yeah.
Let's not go too far. The title might be a little bit beyond reach here this season. But I like it. Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Rooney, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who's your favourite player?
I love Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And everyone. I love everyone.
Is it a bit of a shame that Cristiano Ronaldo is not here? Or do you understand why?
It's okay. It's okay that he doesn't come here. I think everyone understand him.
Yeah. And will you be at the game on Tuesday?
Yes, I will be there.
And did you manage to get any players to sign anything? Have you said hello or got any pictures with any players? I saw David De Gea.
I got Brian Robson.
So wait, you were just in the crowd and Brian Robson just gave you his hat?
I just gave him a hat and he signed.
He signed your hat. I see. Oh, I see. Yes, of course. Brilliant. Love it. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me.
Thank you too.
Cristiano Ronaldo, he's not here. Is that disappointing for you know Thai fans that he's not come? Obviously, there's you know personal reasons that we've been spoken about, but also the wider context is that he wants to leave the club. Is that disappointing that he's not here?
For me, I think all most of the fans in Thailand are waiting for Cristiano. He is their idol. He's a role model. So the thing he's coming is, like I said before, heartbroken for Thai fans. But we share a team, Larry. And we support the team, so we have to support Rashi, we have to support Anthony, we have to support Fred, Scott, Raphael, and everyone, and also the new coming, Cheryl Malaysia.
The players will come and go, but the club will always be there, and the supporters will always be there. But I actually talking around a lot to all the fans, Chelsea, Liverpool fans. Even before, when I was in the stadium, I was talking to the fans of Liverpool. They were like, where's Ronaldo? And I was like, you know, that's the kind of question that the international media has been asking Erik ten Hag a lot and hasn't get any answer, so I can't answer you as well. But he actually said that, you know, we're not making jokes here. We actually, Liverpool fans, we want to see him as well. He's, you know, the star of the sport. He's actually transcending the sport in many ways. So the Liverpool fans is like, yeah, they kind of feel sad as well that he is not here. And I actually believe that all the fans of the game actually feel kind of sad that he isn't here. You know, when all this kind of tour happened, it's not only about the game. It's about, you know, the activities, the signings, the memories that they will share with the players that are here.
Great to get a sample of that, Laurie. It's interesting that the fans felt disappointed, even if they were Liverpool supporters, not to see Ronaldo. I don't know how fans here really feel about it. I don't think there's the same type of sadness, but you can understand that because it's their opportunity to see him up close, personal, in the flesh, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, the atmosphere last night was, you know, you had Liverpool versus United, you had songs, you know, for both teams, but obviously it was a more pleasant atmosphere than you'd expect at an actual Manchester United v Liverpool game, where it'd be probably more febrile, you know, Anfield or Old Trafford. So yeah, that was their opportunity to see Cristiano Ronaldo, wasn't there, so you know, there's disappointment there. It was the question that was asked in the press conference over at Ten Hag, as one of the lads mentioned there, that, you know, we didn't really get any answers on what, you know, would ultimately happen. Ten Hag said he wasn't for sale, but he hadn't yet spoken to him, which I found surprising. I don't know what you guys think. You know, either way, either he calling him or Ronaldo, you know, calling Ten Hag. There is, you know, this family issue that we're talking about, so you have to acknowledge that. But yeah, as I say, the wider context being that he wants to depart, so you sort of think, would there be an opportunity to have a conversation just about that? And that was a kind of interesting aspect of the press conference. Very clipped, very short with his answers, as we know Erik ten Hag is. But he did give a stare down to one journalist at one point in the questioning, when there was a bit of a misunderstanding, I think, as to whether he'd spoken to him or not. And because, you know, these questions kept coming, Ten Hag was a bit, I sensed a bit irritated, and he, you know, rather than, you know, elaborate more, he kind of sort of said what he wanted to say and then, you know, put the glare down. And it was only broken because, you know, people started going, kind of laughing really, and Ten Hag then sort of relaxed. And, you know, I quite like that though, you know, authority, I like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Ronaldo thing, listen, we'll probably, you know, keep talking about it for, you know, a few more weeks yet. If he stays, if he goes, it has left the door open for Anthony Martial to kind of stake a bit more of a claim on this pre-season tour, you know, when he probably started the summer as somebody that United would look to offload with it for a bit of money. But no, the kind of, it was great being around Thai fans, you know, in the stands. There was lots of people really enjoying it. And I think that kind of gave me a real appreciation of why, you know, clubs do these kind of tours. Yes, obviously it's a commercial endeavour. You know, they want to, you know, broaden out their global fan base. But there are people here who have genuine affection for the club and, you know, enjoy the fact that they've actually come over here. So it was kind of heartwarming to see.
Yeah, and of course you visited a 24-metre or 42-metre, was it, lying down Buddha statue at a temple in Bangkok as well. That was an interesting Instagram post.
If it's not on the gram, did it even happen? That's my question.
It was the choice of having a selfie with the statue as opposed to just taking a picture and marvelling at the statue.
That's what everyone was doing.
An icon to people.
Yeah, good point. I suppose I should have kept my ugly mug out of it.
Two icons in one picture.
I did also bang the dong that they had there. But the kind of architecture is, you know, the I think it's 16th, 17th century. Very ornate, you know, beautiful to look at. So it was nice to have a little walk around. Little bit different to Koh San Road, which was a Sunday night endeavour, which was a different kind of, you know, sampling of the local delicacies such as fish bowls. I know Talk of Devils listeners are always after what we're drinking.
You're drinking fish bowls? Was it Malia 2007 all over again?
When it's, you know, 350 baht, which is what I think like less than, you know, like seven, eight quid, you know, it's a cheap way to kind of just enjoy.
Fish bowls by yourself? Atmosphere.
Not by myself. Everyone was out. Oh, do you mean just right. That I drunk? The whole pack was out. It was a lovely mix of different people.
Are you having a solo fish bowl?
No. That would be way too much. I'm just going to have to push the fish bowl out of shot now, aren't I? but no, I tell you what, I did sample as well that you might be impressed by, a scorpion on a stick.
Oh.
A barbecued scorpion. Excellent. Well, they came round with them, and I think maybe this is the result of the fish bowl. You know, that the Dutch courage was enhanced, and it was obviously very cheap, and so people were egging me on. You know, sod it. I'll have a scorpion. So I felt like I was in, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, you know, the jungle. Not the celebrity bit, the eating of the random food.
Well, you said it, mate.
And obviously now we're going to Australia, aren't we? That's the next leg. So we'll see if there's any kangaroo testicles or whatnot. But just for a brief synopsis for the people that are obviously dying to know, it was barbecue kind of flavour, fine to eat, but a bit chewy.
Okay. Ever sampled a scorpion, Andy?
No, I've not. And I'm not going to offer much on the drink perspective because I came here through Saudi Arabia where obviously alcohol is a no-no and I knew that. And then after having met some good United fans there, I went to Islamabad and alcohol was also a no-no there and I sort of knew that as well. And then I got to Bangkok and I'd been here for 1 hour and a note was pushed under my hotel door saying, as from midnight tonight, there will be a 24-hour alcohol ban. And I'm very respectful of the laws of the countries which I'm in, but I do feel like someone's chasing me around, making sure that I never drink any alcohol. Because the first time I would have been able to drink it would have been like the minute that the ban started. And I'm leaving for Australia myself via the Philippines on Thursday. I think we're all losing track of days at the moment.
Actually, the Philippines, Andy.
Yeah, I'm going through the Philippines, mate. I am going through there.
Of course you are.
And then I'm going to arrive in Melbourne. I'm just going to go straight to the bar in the airport before I have my passport checked, before they let me in the country.
Do you want to wait for me to give you the Castlemaine?
Yeah.
You know, at your hotel. Yeah. I'll be there with the pie.
I think in Victoria, it's VB. I think Castlemaine is Brisbane. And I'm sure Australians are going to pick us up on this. But VB and Foster's doesn't really exist, I don't think, in Australia. So
they do not drink Foster's in Australia. They are very vocal about that.
They don't sit in hats with corks dangling off it and drink it either, do they, with kangaroos?
Saying like throw another shrimp on the barbie 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
In fact, we've been told it's freezing in Melbourne. Well, not quite freezing, but really cold. It's
definitely raining. I've seen a lot about that.
Whereas Bangkok's hot. It's a big city. I really like Bangkok, actually. It's changed so much since I first came here in 95 on the Koh San Road where Laurie's mentioning. It's just a boom city. And I've come probably every 3 or 4 years on average, and it's a really good place. But it is a low season here, which means hotels are great value. But it rains. It rained before the game. It rained during the game. But I was impressed by the Thai United fans Laurie spoke to. And just you meet intelligent fans here. It's not just all about, oh, we want to see Ronaldo. Clearly, he's a big draw for a lot of people. But a lot of the United fans I meet, they follow United week in, week out. And they'll follow United whether Ronaldo's there or not in the future.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road.
So that was Bangkok on Tuesday then, and our reflections of Manchester United against Liverpool and all that it brought in Bangkok as well. But as Andy sampled, he had quite a journey getting over to Thailand. So here is Andy Mitten's meandering journey from Barcelona to Bangkok.
He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I'm traveling to Bangkok the long way via Jeddah, the second biggest city in Saudi Arabia, and Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. And I said I was doing that on this podcast, and United fans kindly came forward and said, let's meet. And Aziz was kind enough to pick me up from the airport in Jeddah. I wanted to break my journey up. I didn't fancy getting too much jet lag. And I had like 16 hours in Jeddah, of which 8 of them were spent sleeping. But I've had a good look around here. Aziz, what's your greatest moment as a United fan?
Winning the Champions League in 2008.
Where did you watch that?
I watched it live with my friends in a sport lounge, big sport lounge, yeah.
And there were Chelsea fans there as well?
Yeah, my close friend is the Chelsea fan. He was very, very, very upset at this time. He didn't talk for 2 days after the match.
Saudi Arabia is a big football country, isn't it? I came here with Manchester United in 2008. There was a 60,000 crowd. It's changed a lot since I came last time. I know that you're in the World Cup finals this year. Would you go to that?
Yeah, I'll go to the first match against Argentina. So against Messi, against well-developed Argentina team with Scaloni. But World Cup is World Cup, you know. We are excited. We don't have any expectation, but I think it will be a better World Cup than before. Many Saudis will go to Qatar, especially it's very close to us, and we have an easy access to Qatar. So, yeah, it will be. I think it will be a beautiful World Cup, this one.
I'm also with Adam. Adam's mother is from the north of Scotland, and Adam's father is from Saudi Arabia. Describe Manchester United support here in Jeddah.
As Aziz mentioned, it's massive support is here. Obviously, they support Real Madrid and Barcelona are the two big main teams here. Obviously, due to Messi and Ronaldo when they were there and those teams. But as far as English team goes, it's Man United. Then other teams depend on different decades or different times of football. With Arsenal and Thierry Henry, then Chelsea and the Mourinho days, then with City now, and Liverpool due to Mo Salah.
We're on a really wide boulevard. 7 lanes each way. There's a lot of construction going on, lots of new towers. It's very modern. There's lots of Western brands here. I've gone past places like lots of Starbucks, cinemas, I sense a real change from when I was last here in Riyadh to see United. One, you can just turn up and get in the country now. And two, the whole crowd was wearing those beautiful white robes. What was the right word for them?
Thobes.
Okay, thobes.
Yeah.
Is society changing here?
Yes, it is.
A lot?
A big difference. Some of the changes that are happening here are happening in other countries as well. With the newer generation and the social media and the growing of social media, that's evident to see.
What are the main changes in society since you were a teenager?
Well, the openness, lesser restrictions, I guess. There's more access to like TV. You're able to see more football, the internet, obviously. So there's been a big improvement with the aim, I guess, to mirror what's happening in Dubai. So it's good. Like, it's something that's exciting to happen.
Is it ever cold here, by the way?
Define cold.
Well, you've got to wear a coat. Do you own a coat?
I do, yes, because I do have to go to Britain.
So you only have you ever worn a coat in Saudi Arabia?
Well, yes, but...
Rarely,
yes. And it's not a heavy coat. Like, the coldest I guess it'll get nowadays here is 20. That's classed as cold here. 20, 18 at night, something like that.
I think we're coming up to the airport now. It's absolutely huge. Just imagine, like, the opposite of Manchester Airport. One of them functions and one of them doesn't at all. So... thanks for looking after me and showing me around your city. Can I have a prediction for Manchester United this season? League finish and any cups?
It's hard.
That was a big sigh, Aziz.
Yeah, it's hard to predict, but I think I won't say we'll win a league. It's hard, especially with the city. City is so strong. Liverpool and even Tottenham with Conte, Chelsea. Arsenal is also doing well in the transfers.
Where are we going to finish?
Top four.
Any trophies?
FA Cup.
Adam?
I hope at least fourth. My head says probably fifth. We'll just lose out because I feel Liverpool and City will be top two. Spurs, I feel they might be third, and then fourth place is up for grabs between Chelsea, Arsenal and us. As for the cups, I'll be optimistic and say we'll win one. Maybe if we actually are serious in the Europa League, we might win that.
I'm glad none of you have mentioned Newcastle United as well, boys, because I know that their takeover was a source of pride here. Let's hope that Newcastle finish 14th this season as we come into the South Terminal or the North Terminal. I'm trusting you to get me to the right place so I can carry on my journey towards Bangkok for United's first game. I've now travelled on to Islamabad, the capital, but not the biggest city, in Pakistan. And there's an official supporters club in this country. A lot of the members are based in Lahore, run really well by Ishmael. And he's driven here with a couple of the boys.
I've actually come from Lahore to Islamabad, and we've driven 4.5 hours to come and meet Andy, who we're all a big fan of. And obviously his work is amazing, and we hope...
Stop talking about me. I've come here to talk about you, boys. Yes. Tell me about United support in this country.
United support is the biggest in this country, so it
bigger than Liverpool.
Every other club.
Are there any City fans here?
Just one or two.
No, five. Don't be harsh.
Five. Yeah. How are you feeling about United at the moment?
At the moment, obviously, we're all optimistic. We hope for the best, and hopefully, Erik ten Hag can help us reclaim the heights that we once were at.
How difficult it is being a Pakistani United fan getting to England to watch matches. You told me you have had 12. Fans have applied for tickets for Brighton, but yes. It's not that straightforward. It's expensive. How much is yes. it?
So it's about £2,500, all inclusive, obviously flights, accommodation, and also the visa fees as well. So it's not easy at all. And obviously, to apply any visa, you need about 50, 60 lakh in your account as well, which is Pakistani rupees. So that's a lot of money just to show the UK embassy actually that the person can accommodate for all the costs. So it's not easy at all. And obviously we have around 120 fans who go every year to Manchester.
Who's been rejected for a visa here? Right. I hope that someone from the Home Office is listening to this. Why did they reject you?
They said my payment terms were not complete.
What does that mean?
The structure of my financials was not right, but it was right. I checked it a million times.
That just sounds like absolute twaddle. So you could have gone to Manchester. You had a ticket for a game.
I had a ticket at the Stretford End. It was a game for United versus Spurs. Mourinho was in charge for Spurs.
Yeah.
This was November 2019, but yeah. I didn't get the visa.
I must say, in mitigation, for me to get into this country, I've had to tell the Pakistani authorities my life story, and then they ask for even more information. So it can be... what I think they need to do is just drop it on both sides and make an exemption. If you're going to watch football, or if it's football-related, visa-free travel. Finally, how are you feeling about Manchester United this season? Can you tell listeners on Talk of the Devils podcast, where will United finish this season?
I think United is going to finish in the top four this time, and I have a really positive feeling about the new manager, and it's going to be really good for Manchester United. The good times are going to come back.
I think we need a top four spot for sure. Another year in the Europa League will not cut it.
Any finish below top four is a failure for us, and we wouldn't stand for that.
Top four, I guess.
It's a new Orange Dawn, and under Ten Hag, we're going to get top four for sure.
Top three.
You're wearing a Glazer family t-shirt. You must really support the Glazer family. No, I'm joking.
I don't actually, but I do think we're going to finish third this season. Yeah.
Your top is beautiful. That was the blue shirt from 87-88. Yeah. Why did you buy that?
I just like how it looks.
That reminds me of Norman Whiteside scoring two at Southampton on the opening day of the season. You're the man who picked me up from the airport at 1 o'clock in the morning. Thank you very much from all my family. Where United finishing this season?
Anytime, Andy. I think they'll do well to finish third, but I just want to watch us play good football again, I think.
Is that what it's about, this season?
Yeah, for me at least, because I couldn't bear the football that we saw. I mean, even if we finish outside the top four, it's about us competing in big games and playing good football, and whatever position comes along with it, we'll take it. I think all of us understand it's going to take some time catching up to the other sides in the league. So start off playing with good football, get players in who want to play for the shirt, and then, yeah, we'll take it on from there.
I've had a great day here. I'm going to head on to Bangkok now. The food was wonderful. I hope my bowels agree with that and don't let me down on that. And I'll join you from Bangkok.
I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
Andy, I thought it was going to be weird and wonderful, and it sort of was, wasn't it? But how fascinating to meet Manchester United fans who are so engaged with the club in these places.
Loved it, absolute pleasure. Glad that I went to meet the Reds in Jeddah and then to Islamabad. A lot of the Reds who came to see me in Islamabad, they drove from Lahore, they drove 4 hours. I felt pretty humbled by that, and really interesting for me just to learn about Pakistan, about the history, about the food, about the culture, to see it with my own eyes. I like travelling and meeting people. And I'm glad that I did it. And Manchester United makes all of this possible. And some of the stories that the Pakistani Reds were telling me, you know, they go to Manchester, and it's not just about getting a ticket that's a problem. They routinely get rejected for visas. The High Commission looks and says, you've not got enough money in your bank. Like, I have. I've got a good job. I've worked hard. I've saved up for a dream of a lifetime. And it's not always possible. So makes you think sometimes, you know, I grew up 2 miles from Old Trafford. Very, very easy just to get to a game. And there are a lot of people for whom it's absolutely not easy. And my respect for them absolutely went up. And it was a really good experience before getting to Bangkok. And it broke the journey up for me as well. I lasted longer just before COVID, and I got really bad jet lag, and that's one of the reasons why I did it as well. I'm glad that I did.
Great to hear, Carl, as well, that fans in these places are engaged with not just Manchester United, but with The Athletic, the coverage that you write, and this podcast as well.
I don't want to toot my own horn a little bit, but I do always find it remarkable that people outside my immediate friend circle and family also read my esoteric ramblings on football. I had a similar experience to Andy when I was in Nigeria, of just talking to Manchester United fans, and they were saying, oh yeah, we read The Athletic all the time, we love talking to the Devils, we love this. And I was like, oh yeah, this is Manchester United is such a broad church. And I think it's amazing that your love of a football team can connect you with so many people around the world, some of whom, you know, different cultures, different languages, different everything, really. But you can all come together for a two-hour period and cheer on the Reds. So, yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it less when the team is bad, but they won 4-0. I'm not going to get carried away, so I love it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You all right, Laurie?
Yeah, look at his head.
What's it? I've seen his socks. I've seen his hair.
I've seen shorts.
I've seen several different backdrops. I've seen confused looks. I'll give him a minute because he could do with being on this bit, really. We're nearly there, though, lads, anyway.
Yeah, sure.
I thought he just needed power. It looks like he needs divine intervention at this point, doesn't he? Oh. Anyway, he's back now.
It's not worked. Sorry.
Right. Laurie, we've got De Jong to talk about, and that's it.
Okay, let's do De Jong quickly. Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, at this point, I feel like there should be some sort of theme music playing because we're going to talk about Frenkie De Jong again. Surprise, surprise. Laurie has written about the latest this week on The Athletic. You've probably seen it by now with David Ornstein. Manchester United have sent a delegation to Barcelona. There's shades of Ed Woodward coming home from the pre-season tour to do some business from a few years ago. But this time, they're hoping it will make the breakthrough. Is that right?
Yeah, theme music Jaws, maybe. You know, the kind of impending sense
going
of,
that way, isn't it?
Of doom.
Yeah, dread.
Well, I mean, I think the fact they're both out there, and Andy will know Barcelona better than I do, and the, you know, perhaps the reasons for the trip, but you know, they're out there to finalise this Frenkie de Jong deal, aren't they? You know, they've met with Barcelona executives, so they wouldn't do that, go all that way without the sense that they could complete the deal, right? You know, I know you're saying that United have had a history of doing that before and not coming away successful, but I do feel like this one's a bit different. You've got Barcelona as willing sellers, no matter what Juan Laporta says publicly. You've got Frenkie de Jong, who I think would be open to the move, you know, albeit, you know, perhaps reluctantly and perhaps with the...
There's more doubt on that now, though, than ever, isn't there?
I know,
considering
possibly
the way the stories are going.
Yeah, I know, and obviously I was with you on the Athletic podcast with Paul Ballas, and, you know, he's very well informed and said that was kind of the crucial aspect. But I don't know, I kind of feel like if you've got a club that are pushing you out the door, you've got a club that really wants you, you've got a manager that we've worked under before, clearly, as long as they can solve this kind of small issue of 18 million euros or whatever it is in kind of deferred wages that he's owed from Barcelona, then, you know, that is a reason why anybody on this planet would want to stay currently employed by, you know, somebody that owed him that kind of money. So, but I do feel that, you know, the fact that they've gone out there, it's clearly to thrash out whatever kind of compromise they can come to with Barcelona, because it's basically Barcelona saying, well, that's on you, you know, he's going to be your player, you pick that tab up, and they're saying, well, no, that was the agreement you struck with him, it's on you. So clearly there's some kind of negotiation going on that regard, and you know, from a number of weeks ago, I think, you know, United accepted that was the main sticking point from their point of view. But listen, maybe then it is up to Frenkie de Jong, and that could still not quite be what he wants, and that would be a big thing for United, because this is the player that Erik ten Hag has had as his number one. It feels like he would transform the midfield, and United's business was kind of designed to work around it. You know, that was the big expense for the budget. You know, that everything else is kind of an offshoot of that. You know, Lisandro Martinez, which the price with Ajax is going up and up. You know, Christian Eriksen will, you know, join at some point. Taram Last is the other one that they've got through the door, but Frenkie de Jong is the jewel in the crown, really, of what Ten Hag wants to do this summer, and if it doesn't happen, then it would be a bit of a disaster. So the pressure's on, for sure, but I think that's why they've gone over there to try and get it done.
Yeah, Andy, this feels a quite pivotal in Manchester United's summer, this particular transfer. And I think also the sense of this being a new era for United. I mentioned Woodward before, but obviously it's Richard Arnold now, John Murta as well. They want a different narrative as well, don't they? They want to be the ones going over to Barcelona to get this deal done and over the line and not being coming back empty-handed like people have in the past, to make people feel more positive and feel like a new era is different.
I think if you ask Frenkie de Jong now, would you like to stay in Barcelona? He would say yes, and so would his partner. Barca would like to sell him because they want the money. United will be fine with the fee. There's issues which we've spoken about. It's taken time. It's going to take some more time. I think it will come down to Barcelona's board putting pressure on Xavi Hernandez, the manager, who likes Frenkie de Jong, and Xavi basically saying, I'm under pressure to sell you. We brought other midfielders in. You might not get the same opportunities. And as soon as a player hears that, they think, I'm not wanted here 100%. I hear a lot of United fans saying, if you don't want to come, forget about him, move on to someone else. I don't really buy that line. I think if Frenkie de Jong did move, he would be ultra professional and adapt, because that's what professional footballers do. And it's also nice to be desired as well by one of the biggest clubs in the world. But look at it from his perspective. He's playing Champions League football. He's living in a brilliant city where he's completely happy, playing for a club which he's dreamed of playing off in a region he used to go on holiday to all of the time. And he signed a contract. You don't just sign a contract for a laugh. He's absolutely entitled to have his opinion. He shouldn't be forced to go anywhere. And I don't think he's being forced, but this is football. And in the same way as if Cristiano Ronaldo really wanted to force his way out, he probably could do. And if Football Club Barcelona really push for him to go because they want the money and they do need the money, then he will probably go. People say to me, is he coming, yes or no? I'm really reluctant to give a yes or no. I'd say it's a 60-40% chance of him going in Manchester United's favour.
So that's a yes then?
Yeah. John and Jordi Cruyff and Matteo Alemany have met each other before, so this is good that John Murta is meeting people like senior people at FC Barcelona, and they can talk about Frenkie at the moment, but it's good to have these channels of communication, especially for John, who's relatively new to the job. It's all about contacts, and Barca and United, they should be doing business, because there'll be times when one player wants a change and some United players might want to go to Barcelona in the future. So it's good that they're meeting each other face to face, that they're building up trust, they're building up a decent relationship. Maybe they can help each other in other ways. And I think we still might be talking about this in 2, 3, 4 weeks' time. And it is frustrating because you want to sign a player and you think you want him to sign, but it isn't like buying a pair of shoes. It's not transactional immediately. There's so many different facets to it that we've been speaking about it for a month and we might be speaking about it in another month.
Yeah, it definitely feels like we're going to be talking about it a lot, hence why we need some sort of theme music. So Talk of the Devils listeners, if you've got any sort of suggestion of the music we should play when the Frenkie de Jong section comes up in the podcast each week, then feel free to make a suggestion. And Laurie Whitwell has a finger in the air. Have you got a suggestion, Laurie?
Well, it's just, I don't know, obviously Talk of the Devils listeners couldn't see, but I was scrambling around for the last 10 minutes trying to plug my laptop in as it was about to die.
More like 15. I've seen your socks, I've seen your shoulders, your hair, several backdrops, plug sockets, you name it.
I'm into the hotel lobby and there's loads of lamps that are plugged in and I'm trying all these different plugs and nothing's working. I'm thinking, is my laptop dodgy? Anyway, I found a plug that's attached to a wall and it's working, so I'm sat down against a pillar.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But no, there is a reason for me putting my finger in the air. Just on the transfers, it does sound like Lisandro Martinez is getting closer to being agreed. Ajax and United are in talks. Sources from different sides are saying it's moving in the right direction. And now Andy's got his finger in the air. So what are you coming in with, Andy?
Just on Martinez, he was weighing up basically at Arsenal or Manchester United and spoke to some people because he's got to form his own opinions. And someone said to him, Manchester United are a much bigger club. You'd be signing for the manager. You know the manager. You trust the manager. United are in a state of flux. It's been a problem club. Arsenal, obviously London, which can be attractive if you're not from the UK. Arsenal have been better than Manchester United in the last year. So he's got to make that decision. But I'm told more like Manchester United from his perspective. Although if Eric Bailly keeps playing like that, then don't be needing any more defenders.
Andy, can you say Carl now has his finger in the air, please?
Carl's now got his finger in the air.
Yes, to continue this, I will say Harry Maguire has now been confirmed or reconfirmed as the club captain by Erik ten Hag. And I think that slightly recolours what Ten Hag possibly wants to do with Lisandro Martinez. So we know Martinez, left-footed centre-back, can play in defensive midfield. But if Maguire is the captain, he's traditionally played left centre-back through most of his time at United. That makes me think if Martinez does come in, he won't be left centre-back and he's more likely to play defensive midfield, which I will collate my thoughts on that later on if the deal is done, and we'll say no more about it while we're waiting. Laurie does have his finger in the air now. This is quite fun.
I'll be quick. It was just on the position. The only thing I would add, Carl, is that all I've ever been told is that United see him as a centre-back. He sees himself as a centre-back. So it would be an interesting deviation from that to then go and put him in defensive midfield, which I know, you know, is a position United need. And listen, this finger pointing needs to stop, because now Andy Mitten's got his finger in the air, and you know, we'll hand it over to you, Andy.
On Harry Maguire being captain, he was adamant he wanted to stay Manchester United captain. He felt the confidence that the manager would give him the captaincy. He's been vindicated because he's got the captaincy. I realise that a lot of United fans have got a downer on Harry Maguire at the moment. The only way they're going to not have a downer on him is by him improving his form. But I could say that about seven other players. He's named him as his captain. Hopefully he's learned to be a better captain. I remember him not fronting up after the 6 goal defeat by Spurs at Old Trafford. But he was in a good place before his injury in 2021. Let's hope that he gets back to that place. It's not nice to seem ridiculed, and that's happening too often.
Right, no one has got the fingers in the air anymore, so that seems a good place to leave the podcast. Thank you for being with us. It was a longer Talk of the Devils than usual, but a lot to get in, of course, and that was just Andy Mitten's journey to Bangkok. Come for the details on the tour and a 4-0 win over Liverpool, and stay for the fingers in the air at the end. But don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But thank you, Carl, for being with us. Thank you, Laurie and Andy as well. And thank you for listening at home. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.
I'm going to go get carried away in an aircraft. That was the gag I wanted to make. But there we are.
The Athletic.